Hello and welcome into episode 20 of the Calcio Connection podcast, connecting with you, Italian football fans from all over the world. Alex Dono alongside my co-host, Jerry Mancini, as always. Now, we will be taking a deep dive on Torino a little bit later on with a special guest, Rob Gilman, who we're happy is taking some time to join us. But, Jerry, we have a lot to cover in the Calcio world. How are you, sir?
Fantastic. I caught into a few more episodes of Ozark, and I just want to say that poor horse, man. That poor horse. And what is Wyatt?
Oh, I know the one you're talking about. Oh.
Oh God, it's so bad that I won't even spoil it for anybody. That's how bad it is. And what is Wyatt thinking? What the heck? That is the most disgusting scene I've seen in all three seasons. Okay,
he's going on a cougar hunt, is what he was doing.
Oh yeah, you're telling me, man. And Wendy, she's so over her head, Now she's realizing the cartel owns her. Like, it's just getting more deeper and deeper now, and it's getting good, man.
We don't spend a whole lot of time talking French football, but Jerry, I think your congratulations are in order. A huge congratulations to Mauro Icardi and Wanda, the lovely Wanda, for winning a trophy. Icardi is hoisting now a trophy. We talked about it in our previous episode that Ligue 1 has called off their season. They're not going to finish their 2020 campaign. We weren't sure if they were going to crown a champion or not. They have decided that even though they have not completed the season, they are naming PSG as champions of the league. PSG has a 12-point lead over Marseille, who's in second place, plus a game in hand for PSG with 11 games remaining. So pretty safe to assume PSG would have closed it out, but they are awarded the trophy even with the season not concluding. Jerry, does this make you feel differently about Icardi now that he is the champion of the French league?
My grandmother can win a championship with freaking PSG, and she's almost 90, okay? Like, PSG, to me, this is not something to be satisfied about. I think the bigger thing that he should be happy about is the way he played this season, that he showed that he can play at a high level still and contributed many goals for PSG, and that should help Inter, especially a win-win for both sides. Icardi showing that he still has that touch, that ability to play, and Inter being able to sell him now. And we'll see who is going to be interested in him this summer, but as we said in our previous shows, we always discuss about Juventus and how he wants to go to Juventus and just Juventus. But with Icardi showing that he still has the potential to be a very good number nine, I think he should really weigh his options and choose to leave Inter and now proceed and just start fresh. This can be the beginning of a start fresh for him. So, and to win with PSG in Ligue 1, it's not any player wants to win a trophy. It's great. It's a good feeling. But at the end of the day, and I like Ligue 1. I think they have some really good teams in the league. But when the PSG ownership is just so wealthy and they're able to buy these players, it's just not fair compared to what the other clubs can do in this league. So for me, it's anybody can win with this team.
Yeah, and I hope that Icardi gets sold with no problems this summer. Probably the easiest way to do that would be for PSG to pick up the option and redeem him. He's on loan to PSG this season. I believe the option is about 70 million euros. Although recent reports have indicated that he's not keen to stay in France, and maybe PSG, despite the fact that he had a pretty good year there, may not be that eager to redeem him long term. So if they don't pick up the 70 million option, well, actually, I guess there's two possibilities there. PSG might pick up the option for 70 million and then immediately sell him to Juventus for a profit. Or if they don't redeem the option, Juventus will try and negotiate directly with Inter. And one thing that worries me a little bit, and I'm looking at this, of course, from the perspective of an Interista, where I would like to make as much profit as possible on Icardi's sale. Teams are going to try to play hardball with that since, you know, the economy is in such a weird place right now with the COVID-19 pandemic. I know teams are going to be trying to spend a lot less money this summer than they would be otherwise. So teams will try and shake down enter for a big bargain on Icardi. And you know, the good news is he's basically completely amortized, so whatever Inter gets for him is profit, but I would like to get as much profit as possible. And Jerry, on PSG being crowned French champions, I've noticed something from Juventini that they are really going out of their way to praise their president, the great Andrea Agnelli, who has gone on record at least once. I think he's doubled down on it, but he's gone on record saying that he will not accept a Scudetto if the season is called off now in Serie A. And we're not positive today. You know, we're recording this on Saturday. We don't know for sure if the season continues or not. But Andrea Agnelli has come out and said he will not accept a Scudetto if the season is not concluded. Now, Jerry, I'm glad he said that because I just don't think it would be right at this point, given how close the race is, to accept that trophy under these circumstances. So I'm glad he said it, and I agree with him. But I think the over-the-top praise for those comments, as if he deserves sainthood, is a little bit over-the-top by a lot of these Juventini. Let's not act like he's a hero for saying this, because compare the situation Juve is in compared to PSG in France, or you know, the extreme example is Liverpool in the Premier League. I mean, Juventus right now, they have a 1-point lead over Lazio with 12 games left to play. They've got a matchup with Lazio still unplayed remaining on the schedule and a disadvantage so far in the head-to-head. So on the flip side of it, how terrible would it look if Agnelli said he would accept a Scudetto under these circumstances when you're 1 point ahead and at a head-to-head disadvantage? Like, you would have to be a James Bond villain or a Marvel Comics supervillain to accept a championship like that. I mean, you compare that to the situation PSG is in. I mentioned PSG, you know, they have accepted a French league title despite the season being called off early, but they've got a 12-point lead. Or, you know, if the Premier League season doesn't finish, I don't think anyone would fault Liverpool if they would accept the title. They've got a 25-point lead with only 9 matches left to play. I mean, even if they would forfeit the rest of their season, it would be almost impossible for Man City to catch them. Like, nobody would blame Liverpool for accepting a title. So, look, again, I'm happy Agnelli doesn't want to just accept the Scudetto with 12 games left on the schedule and a 1-point lead. But look at it from the flip side. Like, how bad would he look if he accepted that Scudetto? I don't understand, Jerry, why people are trying to apply him for sainthood.
I agree. It's probably because all the Juventus fans are giving him the praise, and that's a lot of the fan base is Juventini fans. So for me, I think you're right. He's getting way too much praise. It doesn't take a genius to say, hey, we can't accept this Scudetto, only leading by 1 point. Now, had they been up by 12 points or 15 points, yeah, absolutely. But we're seeing Serie A at its finest in over a decade, probably. And so this is something that you can't just say, hey, you know what, we're going to accept the Scudetto. Too bad, we have even amount of games. We don't care if we still have a head-to-head with Lazio. We're going to take it and we're going to call it quits. No, he would look so bad if he were to say, yes, let's just end the season now. We're going to be stated as champions. It would look like he's desperate. And to me, it wouldn't put a good image on him. It would look really bad. So he has to say that, you know what, we need to progress the season, we need to finish it. We are not going to accept the Scudetto. This is not how we're going to be looked as to win a Scudetto. It's just not the right way for our club to go. So I think he's getting too much praise because he's not the, it's nice to see him that he wants to continue the season and he wants to win it the right way. But I do agree with you. It's just way too much praise for something that's common sense. It takes a no-brainer that he's going to say that.
Yeah, and as of a couple days ago, we hadn't had any sort of public comment from Juventus or Inter as to whether either of those clubs favor resuming the season. We know, obviously, Lazio, led by Lotito, had been very vocal in terms of wanting the season to resume and conclude. But over the past 48 hours or so, we have had confirmation that both Juve and Inter are in favor of finishing the season. But the emphasis, Jerry, has been on safety. I think the consensus has been that everybody wants to finish this thing, and that includes the politicians, from the prime minister to the minister of sport to the people who are in charge of running Serie A and the Italian Federation. They all want to come up with a plan to finish the season. They're working in concert on that, but they're yet to agree on the proper safety protocols. They've been trying to kind of copy what Germany is doing with the Bundesliga in terms of their protocol. The only difference is the Bundesliga and Germany seem okay with the idea that if a player tests positive, you just quarantine that one player for 2 weeks and nobody else. Whereas in Italy, the Minister of Sport would much prefer a plan where if a player tests positive for COVID-19, you quarantine everyone who's come into contact with him. Where that gets really complicated is you would figure probably a couple of dozen people, including players from his squad and another squad, would have been exposed to him. So if you quarantine all of them for 2 weeks, you're then again putting the finish of the league in jeopardy. So I don't know how they solve that issue, but I do know that, Jerry, everyone is trying to solve it. And I'm hoping with every day that goes by, as certain clubs are going to be able to start training at least individually on May 4th, others may have to wait May 18th. And that's actually another obstacle, is that every region in Italy is passing different regulations. So some teams may be legally allowed to train before other teams are. These are just some of the challenges that Serie A is going through to try and put a product back on the pitch.
No, absolutely. And until they get the safety protocol in place, it's something that is always going to keep. Will the season start? Will it start by May 18th? Will it be extended even further till June? And I think this is the biggest bridge now. Once they can come up with the safety protocols and how they're going to approach the field, and the players know that whatever's in place is the best thing for their health and safety, then you'll see the Serie A advance and things will set in motion. Now, I'm no doctor. I don't know what goes behind how these people plan, how they come about everything, what they're going to implement, what the process is. But I'm pretty sure that the Italian League and governments and whoever else is involved in this are going to act fast on it. And we're going to probably hear things within the next week. That's what I would assume. And as we get closer to the date, I think there's going to be more clarity as to what's going to happen or what could possibly be happening down the road.
Yeah, and for what it's worth, all of the Serie A clubs have voted unanimously in favor of finishing the season, which is important. Again, it goes to show you everyone's working together to try to make this happen. But there are some comments from the Lecce president that are a little bit pessimistic. Even though he wants to finish, he's not so sure. Lecce president Saverio Sticchi Damiani warns there is currently only in his words, a 51% chance of the season resuming as the situation remains in flux. He says, as things stand now, we would not resume training, he said. And this is going back to the issue of certain regions being allowed to train sooner than later and no consistency there. He says, it's only right to discuss it, but at this moment, there is an unfair disparity with the regions doing different things. I remember in early March that all clubs agreed to stop rather than just those where people were dying in their hundreds per day, because it was for the general health and the sporting thing to do. He continues, it would be best in this case of returning that there was no favoritism or disparity. As things stand, he said, I'd say there is a good possibility of resuming the season, although it depends on what happens after the training starts. He would put it at 51%, he said. So I don't know. I guess, Jerry, 51%, it's better than the alternative, right? It's better than 49% if that's in favor of returning.
Yeah, 51% is better than 49. But at this point, I think everyone is just, they're all clueless as to what's going to happen. And even the players are disgruntled. You got management who's disgruntled. I just don't understand how, I don't know, I don't want to say this the wrong way, like how they had so much time to come up with safety protocols, and I don't understand why it took them so long now to figure out what to put in place. They had months to understand what was going on, how they could approach this, what protocols and standards and rules that they're supposed to put in, and the fact that they still haven't come up with something. Well, they did, but it was insufficient and wasn't reasonable based on, I believe, what they came up with. And they told them to come up with something much stronger for the players. And I feel like with all the time that they were given, it's well wasted. That's what it was.
Yeah.
Damn wasted. And now they're in crunch time mode and they need to figure out what they're going to do, or else here's the one scenario. And a coworker of mine said this at my store, and he just offered me the suggestion we're talking about. And he's like, I don't understand why we just don't wait and we just push it. And next season, you shorten the season. That's all you do, given the circumstances. So you don't scrap the season. You finish it off when you can proceed. And once that's done, you just shorten the next season, which I don't see a problem either, because at this point next season, there ain't going to be any fans anyway. So I don't see the big hit as well, right?
That might be the better way to go, because at least, you know, it's one thing like shortening this season. It's tough because you didn't plan for shortened season. But if you make the schedules like in the fairest way possible for next year and everyone agrees before the season begins to shorten it, that might be the better way to go about this. By the way, we do talk a lot of transfer rumors on the show. What was Juventus sporting director Paratici? Jerry, you were talking to me about some comments that he made about potentially, you know, not knowing when the transfer window will or should start, and that you might see some squads not even add players before next year.
Well, I just saw right now on Football Italia that Paratici is saying that he may just keep the same squad for next season, because he states, I'd say the next transfer session will be creative and elastic. We have to take it day by day because the situation and view of things change constantly. Over the last few days, we seem to get pessimistic and or optimistic depending on the latest statistics. Either we say that we are getting back to playing or we're not playing. We are meant to start training and then we're not. We're still in the balance, so we have to be elastic with our plans. Some say we could play the 2020-21 season with the same squad. It's a possibility. So I think this is when you see the richest team in Serie A, I would say between them and Inter, or wealthiest. And the fact that now he's weighing all his possibilities that, hey, maybe we don't make any moves because economically that may not even be the best idea at this time, because we don't even know what the market's going to be like, when it's going to start, how other teams are going to be situated. And even Juventus is in a situation where they're paying a lot of money for their players. And if they're not playing and they're losing money day by day, so maybe he's thinking, okay, I have a lot of players I have invested so much in. I got two options here. I either keep the same squad and I deal with what I have and utilize the resources I have, even in the Primavera, or he might have to decide to sell to make money in terms of helping his club. So, and I think this leads to the fact that we were just talking about Icardi. I don't think Icardi is going to go to Juventus, because I don't even think they can buy him at this time, for given the situation. And for me, Icardi has to accept the fact that he may not even be going to Juventus. So this is a tough situation for him. Well, not tough. I don't think it's tough for any player. Anytime you're given the opportunity to be playing in any good club such as PSG, you take your chance, your opportunity, you capitalize on it. You're getting paid a lot of money. Don't bitch and complain. And just do your business, especially in an era now where there's a lot of unpredictability and a lot of uncertainty that we just don't know what's going to happen as time goes on. Where before all this happened, we knew what was going to happen next summer. We knew that a certain player would be bought, a certain player would be sold. Now it's no longer that way. We no longer know who's going to be sold or bought, because it's so volatile and it's so up and down and discreet. We just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And I think even the sporting directors running these clubs don't really know yet how much money they'll be able to spend. I think that's a good shout by you. Hey, and maybe Icardi just ends up back at Inter and they make up and it's like one big happy family again. I'll tell you one guy who, if reports are to be believed, will not be back at Inter next year. And it pains me to say it because I like this player a lot. We've talked about him a lot in recent weeks. More reports linking Lautaro Martinez to Barcelona. A Spanish report this week claims he has already decided he wants to be at Barca, and he's informed Inter he's not going to be signing a contract extension. They've been, you know, working on a contract extension for him. I just wonder, though, when we talk about budgets for teams this summer, how much Barca, and obviously that's a gigantic club, so they'll have less financial restraints than most, but how much they'll be able and willing to offer and pay for him. You know, I saw a report this week, don't know how much stock I put in it, you know, claiming that Barca really can't afford to pay more than $50 million for him, which is less than half of Inter's valuation. He has a 111 million euro release clause, so $50 million is not going to cut it. Inter would certainly force him to stay if that was the best offer that they get. So I wonder how this is going to resolve. And, you know, I know that really Inter's going to make a big plusvalenza on him. They paid about 22 plus million euros for him from Argentina, from Racing Club, a couple of years ago. But yeah, I know at this point with him showing so much promise this past year, $50 million is not going to get the job done. Elsewhere, Jerry, this is kind of a follow-up because in an episode last week or earlier this week, we talked about this player with Rui Pereira, who was on with us talking Milan, and he mentioned this guy being on Milan's radar. Luka Jovic, he's, you know, a former Eintracht Frankfurt striker, and when he was at Frankfurt, the guy was an absolute bomber, like a bomber, was scoring goals for fun. He went to Real Madrid last summer for about 60, 62 million euro transfer fee, was a pretty big move for Real Madrid, somewhere in that neighborhood. And it's not worked out there. He's been completely disappeared at Real Madrid. So there's talk of him moving somewhere else. But, you know, Jerry, I could see him winding up at Milan, but this figure doesn't make any sense. A report claims that Milan are offering 35 million euros plus bonuses to sign Jovic from Real Madrid. Now, he was signed for 60 million plus just 1 year ago. So they've probably amortized about 15 million of that. For Madrid to sell him now for 35 million, it doesn't make any financial sense. They take a huge bath on that deal. So I'm not saying he can't end up at Milan. He might. But I think on loan is more likely, or maybe a player swap plus 35 million. I mean, what do you think? Do you think we'll see him maybe wearing the number 9 for Milan next year?
Who the heck would you swap on that shit team?
Teo Hernandez or Donnarumma. There's two guys. Donnarumma, Teo Hernandez, maybe Romagnoli.
Oh, man. Romagnoli, I say there's two. Donnarumma is a player swap. I don't see Real Madrid taking a big loss after one season with Luka Jovic. That is absurd. I don't know if these sources are even true or what they're claiming. To me, it has bullshit written all over it. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and, I mean, the numbers are definitely bullshit. Like, it's not impossible he ends up at Milan, but at that price, you know, you would have to get Madrid drunk first before they make that deal.
And who's to say that he's going to perform at the same level like he did with Frankfurt? Different manager, different style of play. Yes, he played good with Ante Rebic over there. That's fine. But again, two different styles of play from Milan to Frankfurt. So, and you got Stefano Pioli, who probably coaches a different style. So things don't always add up to what they were two seasons ago. And for me, I'm a firm believer that, yes, last season you performed at a certain rate. The season before, you played at a level that was superb with another player. Some players are meant for a certain system. Maybe it's just not working out for Luka Jovic with Real, but who's to say that he's going to reunite and click again with Rebic, with Milan, given with the way things are going, the mentality of some players are just not there. There's a lot of issues there. So I don't know. I just think there's a lot of flaws in this, and I don't see it adding up. Something that I personally don't think it's going to happen. So that's just my opinion. Again, I haven't watched enough Real Madrid to see how Luka Jovic is playing, and maybe a loan, like you said, is probably the best option. So you can increase his value and you can recoup any money instead of losing it, right?
Yeah, no, totally. And it's just like, it's tough because a lot of times, like, up and coming players will make a move to a place like Real Madrid or Barcelona for big money. And it's just, whether it be the pressure, the expectation, or just the fact that there's so much depth on those squads that some of these guys don't find playing time. I mean, you never know who's going to sink or swim. And I don't know if Real Madrid has completely given up on Jovic yet. But if they have, it's got to take more than $35 million to get him there, no doubt.
No, absolutely. You're right.
Very happy to cover a team that we've not yet covered here on Calcio Connection. It happens to be by far my favorite team in the city of Turin. And to talk about Torino, we bring in a man who covers that squad at a very high level. You can find him on Twitter at Torino Blogger. Rob Gilman joins us now from the UK. Rob, how are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. Thank you. How are you?
Doing so well. And, you know, usually when we talk to someone for the first time, I find there's always a cool story behind how someone came to cover a club and support a club. So I'd love to hear the story, Rob, of you and Torino. How did you come to support and cover this team?
So I always loved Italian football when I was a child growing up in England, because a lot of the sort of main televised games in England were on sort of pay-per-view TV. So the only stuff on free television was on Channel 4. There was Italian football. So as a kid, I just used to watch sort of Italian football like every Sunday. The first time I ever went abroad was actually to Italy. When I was 16, I went to Milan on a family holiday. And weirdly enough, I watched two games whilst I was there, and none of which involved Torino. So I saw AC Milan versus Palermo and Inter play Roma, which is the famous Roma game where Totti scores the chip. But because I supported sort of a lesser known English team, I didn't really want to support one of the sort of big teams in Italian football. So I was reading this magazine that I'd taken on holiday with me, and it had like a little profile on all the Italian clubs. And in there was the article about Torino. And it had all the stuff about Grande Torino, and then sort of like obviously the tragedy of Superga, and this team who have been the sort of like biggest team in Italian football, and then tragically they all passed away. And that story, as somebody who loved football in England and never heard of that, I just totally fell in love with the whole story and the romanticism of being the sort of the best team in it, and it sort of sadly ended in tragedy. So ever since then, I sort of started to try and take the word of Torino and pass that on to as many people as I know.
No, absolutely. And I have a soft spot for Torino, because I always take Torino over Juventus all the time, especially in the derby.
I think most people do.
I was going to say that makes two of us, and I'm sure it's unanimous with the three of us right now.
unless you support Juventus, nobody likes Juventus.
That's true. That's true. But last year for Torino under Walter Mazzarri, they did very well. They finished in seventh place and were fortunate to qualify for Europa League. They made it into the qualifying stages to get into the group stage of Europa League. And the club looked destined for greater things this season after a successful season last year. So what were your expectations going into the 2019-20 campaign for Torino?
Well, I think last season was a bit of a strange one for Torino, because they developed a style of football that, whilst it wasn't particularly attractive, it was really, really effective. And I think in the second half of the season, I think they only lost like maybe two or three games. I don't think they lost away from home until nearly the end of the season. But obviously coming into this season, I knew sort of obviously the extra fixture congestion of European football was always going to be difficult. And we had a small squad and we didn't really invest in the summer. But I was still quite optimistic that we could have quite a good season. Unfortunately, we were quite unlucky with the Europa League elimination and the way that came about, because obviously we draw in the playoff round, we drew Wolves, probably the strongest team that we could have faced, and they've then gone on to sort of have a lot of success, and unfortunately things have just gone a bit downhill since then.
No, absolutely. And then in February, we saw Walter Mazzarri decide to leave Torino by mutual consent. And at this time of his departure, Torino were in 12th place in Serie A and were 11 points above the drop zone. So what went wrong this season for Mazzari after a successful campaign last year?
I mean, strangely, even after the Europa League defeat, we actually started quite well. We won our first game of the season and then played the second leg against Wolves, which lost but played well. And then went straight into that game to then play Atalanta away from home and won 3-2. So we started the season with two wins and everything was looking really good. We then faced a home game against Lecce, whereas if we'd won, I think we would have gone top of the table. But unfortunately, we lost 2-1, I think it was, in that game. And it's been really a struggle ever since then. There's probably not just one reason why things have gone badly for us. The defence last season was probably one of our strong points. And we lost Emiliano Moretti, who retired at the end of last season. And then Nicolas Nkulu, who's probably our best defender. There was sort of speculation that he wanted to leave the club literally in between the two legs of the Europa League tie. And then our big summer signing, who was Simone Verdi, just hasn't really lived up to the expectations at all and just hasn't performed a very well.
So after Mazzari was out, the team decided to appoint Moreno Longo as his replacement. So a two-parter here, Rob. What were your thoughts on Longo at the time of the appointment? And, you know, now I know there's a small sample size, but with a little bit of time to look back on, do you think he was the right man for the job?
I think after the 7-0 home defeat by Atalanta, I don't think there was much chance that Mazzari was going to stay long.
Yeah.
So, I mean, to be honest, watching that game, and I think I was watching it with my brother, and I said, like, there's no way he will survive this. And Moreno Longo was one of the people that I had in mind as somebody who could come in the middle of the season and try and keep us up in that situation. Mazzari actually lasted another week, and then we went to Lecce. And unfortunately, I actually went to the game and we lost 4-0. After that, there was absolutely no chance Mazzari was going to stay. The fans turned on the players, which at some stage had sort of they'd escaped a lot of criticism. It was sort of aimed mainly at Mazzari. But as soon as the players as soon as the fans had turned on the players, it was sort of all over for Mazzari. I think Longo was probably the right choice at that time. He's a Torino fan, used to play for the club, and was as coach of the youth team. And to be honest, I don't think you can read too much into the results that he's had so far. He has played 3 games and lost 3 games. But to be honest, I don't think Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp could come in to that situation and immediately have a turnaround on results, because the morale and confidence of the players was so low that I just don't think they could have... it would have been unrealistic to expect them to come into 3 games, 2 of which are really difficult, away at Milan and away at Napoli, and expect them to get a result. So I think he deserves a little bit more time. I think it will be interesting to see whether he'll be given that.
You know, and of course, it's been a tough year for Torino. The position in the table is pretty perilous at the moment, close to the relegation zone. Between injuries and manager change, it's just been one of those seasons where things just haven't gone well. And, you know, Jerry talked about being in European position a year ago. So, I mean, in your opinion, Rob, maybe if we look big picture, what is it going to take to get Torino back on the right track?
I think this season, I really do hope that this is just an aberration. This is just a one-off season where a number of things have gone badly and everything that could go wrong has gone wrong. I think if you look at the squad, it's really far too good to be involved in a relegation battle. Salvatore Sulegu, in my opinion, is the best Italian goalkeeper. Donnarumma is very good and has got that potential. And I'm sure he'll go on to have an unbelievable career. But I think at this current point in time, Sulegu is a better goalkeeper. Armando Itto, Andrea Bellotti, all regular internationals for Italy. But having said that, I do think the squad needs an overhaul. I think there's a lot of players there who just quite plainly don't want to be there. And it's probably about time that the players who don't want to be there leave. And we use that money to sort of reinvigorate the club and buy some younger, hungrier players who can sort of move us on. I think it's unrealistic to expect us to do an Atalanta or compete for Champions League spaces, but Torino should always be in that sort of aiming for sort of the spaces around sixth to ninth. I think that's got to be what the ambition of the club should be.
No, absolutely. And one thing that has been rumored in the news has been that director of sport, Davide Vagnati, which has actually not rumored, has been confirmed that he's leaving Spa by mutual consent. That he left Spa by mutual consent after 7 years that he'd been together with the club. Now, he was a key part in the success of the club as he helped Spa reach the top flight for the first time in 5 decades. Now, it is reported by Football Italia that he is expected to sign with Torino. Do you believe this is a smart choice by the Turin side, or should they weigh their options out and perhaps maybe there's better options that they can should consider for the future of this club?
I think a sporting director is definitely one area that where we did need some improvement, because obviously last summer Gianluca Petracci went to Roma, where he did quite well at Torino, picked up a couple of sort of unknown gems, a lot of bargains for the club, and then this season we sort of promoted from within with Massimo Bava, who sort of, again, maybe not through any fault of his own, but we only made one signing in the entire sort of transfer windows, both in the summer and in January, who was Simone Verdi, who's not particularly a secret. He's a player who's sort of been playing in Italy and playing in Serie A for 5 or 6 years. So it's not like I think I probably could have signed him if I wanted to. So I think a sporting director is definitely an area where we needed to improve and try and find some players who can sort of help us reach that next level. Vagnati's done an incredible job sort of looking from afar in sort of getting spiraled from the third division to straight into Serie A with a back-to-back promotions, I think it was. So he's definitely one of the names that I wouldn't dislike seeing him at the club. I think a lot of it depends on how much money he's got to spend, because unfortunately in sort of modern football, you can't really do much without money. But yeah, I think of all the names, there hasn't really been many other names linked with a job of sporting director at Torino. But yeah, Vagnati sounds like it'd be a good idea to me.
No, you provide really good points there. And with the success that he's shown with Spal, I think that he should be a consideration. And this is like a kind of like a promotion for him, going to a mid-table team to see what he can do with a more advanced club, and maybe for the future, who knows what the next step is after that. But one player who has shown to be a capable player for Torino and has been a leader for them is Andrea Belotti. And he's signed with Torino until the end of June 2022. He's signed until June 2022. And now, do you see the striker extending his contract with Torino for the long haul? And can we see that this is a player maybe that they should build around for the future of the club?
I think Belotti is definitely good enough to play for a club who regularly competes in Europe. And obviously this season, with this sort of flirting with relegation, that's really not a position that he should find himself in. He's a hard worker. He never seems to complain. But even in this situation, you can sort of see his ability levels have dropped, just because sometimes he either seems to be trying to do everything on his own or working too hard and not got players on the same wavelength of him for this season. And he's still young and can improve. However, I think given the sort of current circumstance that we find ourselves in, I would be surprised if many clubs can have the finances to afford him in the summer. And obviously with the European Championships being delayed until next summer, I think the best idea for Belotti would be to stay for the next season at least, where he's guaranteed regular football for Torino. And then depending on how that season goes, that would probably depend on how the future would go. If we had another successful season, he could be tempting to sign a new contract. And then if we sort of had a disappointing season again with 1 year in his contract, that would probably be the time where we'd try and make some money back on him, and it would probably be at a more reasonable level for clubs to afford. I know there's been rumours with Napoli. I know AC Milan have been interested in the past, and he's a Milan fan. So obviously, I think if he got to a situation where there's only 1 year left in his contract, maybe that would be the time where other teams could afford him.
Really well said. And Rob, when you talked earlier, you told the great story about how you came to support Torino. You mentioned the Grande Torino team of the 40s and just the romantic story behind that. And unfortunately, things ended in tragedy with that plane crash. So something I'd love your take on it. I know this was before your time, obviously, but you know, you're somewhat of a Torino historian. I mean, that was a tragedy that, you know, really rocked the entire nation. I mean, you think about the time it took for for hearts and minds to heal from that. And football wise, obviously decimating Torino and really decimating the Azzurri as well with such a presence on that squad. Like, well, what was it like for the club just to recover from that? Like, how long did it take for Torino to become whole again after that incident?
I think psychologically, just the impact of that, like Italy, bear in mind it was 1949, so only 4 years after the end of the Second World War, just that psychological effect that Italy had this thing that was something to be proud of. It was one of the greatest teams in Europe who were going around to different countries and sort of promoting Italy, promoting Turin, promoting Torino. And unfortunately, as you say, it ended in tragedy. It sort of took a while for even it affected the Italian national squad because a lot of the players for Torino played for Italy as well. In the 1950 World Cup, they actually took, because they didn't want to take plane travel because obviously of what happened with Superga, they took a boat to Brazil, and unsurprisingly that did not leave the players in the best sort of frame of mind for a football tournament. And then for Torino themselves, I'm not quite sure how soon after Superga, I think it was only a few years, they relegated into Serie B and really, really struggled to get back into the position that they had been. They did win a Scudetto in 1976, which is our last Scudetto and probably will be our last for a very long time unless something incredible happens. You could argue Torino probably never really recovered from that. They've had spells of success in the 90s, reaching the UEFA Cup final. In the sort of recent years, they've qualified for the Europa League a couple of times, but nothing really to that level of being sort of one of the best teams in Italy on a consistent basis, which undoubtedly they were in the 40s.
Last thing I'd like your perspective on is just the Serie A as a whole. Is, of course, at this time, we don't know, you know, whether or not, we can't say 100% the league is going to restart and finish the 2019-2020 campaign. But hypothetically, if we assume the season does resume and finish, how do you see the Scudetto race playing out? And obviously, it's primarily between Juventus and Lazio, who are separated by 1 point. I've not completely thrown in the towel on Inter, even though they're behind the eight ball a bit. But who do you see winning that Scudetto if the season does finish?
I think you're probably right not to count Inter out, because if football does resume, it's going to be so unusual. It's going to be such an unusual situation that could involve sort of neutral stadiums, definitely no fans in the stadium. Whichever team adapts quickest to that is going to have the best chance of winning the title. It pains me to say, but the experience of Juventus would probably suggest that they would have the best ability to sort of adapt to that situation. But then they've got players who maybe live off the crowd, maybe would feed off that. So I think it's a difficult one. Obviously, my preference would be for Lazio or Inter to win the Scudetto. But I think if football does resume, I think it could go down to the final day. It could be some sort of dramatic television for everybody to watch and maybe hopefully give people that boost that they need at the current time.
Really good stuff here, Rob. Let the people know where they can find you on social media and where they can find your work.
Yeah, so Twitter, it's at Torino Blogger. I do have a Torino blog, which hasn't actually been updated for the last couple of months because obviously there's not been any games, and as we're currently on a row of six defeats in a row, it's quite difficult to actually write about that.
So
I do have a website, which is torinofcinglese.com, where you'll get to find a bit more in-depth information, which is more sort of previews and sort of reports from matches. But yeah, if you do go onto that website and notice it's not currently up to date, it's because I just can't find the motivation to talk about the defeats on a regular basis. But Twitter's probably the best place to catch me because I'm on there most of the time, like every day.
Well, what has quickly become the favorite segment from a lot of our listeners, and I love it as well, you guys know that, it's time for Story Time with Jerry. Now, I did promise at some point I'm going to do my own story time, but I got to check on a couple of statute of limitations in the state of Florida before I tell some of my stories. So I'm going to save that for another day. So I'm going to turn it over to Jerry. Jerry, I know you had a few possibilities of stories you could tell for this episode. What are you going to go with, you think?
I'm going to go with a story that a buddy of mine who podcasts, was at Joe's house. I'm very not open with names, but I'm pretty sure Joe will have a good laugh about this. And it was in high school, I would say around high school, maybe. No, you know what? It was in high school, and he had a house party. A bunch of guys came over, some girls. It was just all of us, and this was my heydays where I used to drink. Like, I still drink, but not like I used to back in high school.
You were knocking down the Labatt Blues, right?
No Labatt Blues, man. But that night there, I was so wasted that I felt so bad. I can't believe what I did was... So I went to the washroom, okay? And I'll keep it as not as gross as possible. I did a number two. And while I'm doing number two, I yacked all over his floor. And I'm like... Oh shit, but I'm so drunk. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm gone. I am toast. And I look up and like, oh shit. So I open the washroom. And as the worst part is, I don't even remember what I did after that. Who knows if I freaking even cleaned or not. That's the worst part. Like, oh, that's how bad it got. Okay. And, my buddy Joe sees and I'm like, oh shit. So I don't know who cleaned it up, to be honest. So I feel bad for whoever who did have to clean it up, because that was such... It was all over his washroom.
I hope it wasn't his mom or something. Like,
no, his mom wasn't home. His parents were out. Okay. But later that night, all of a sudden, Joe comes with the hair buzzer, takes a piece of my hair out. So the next morning, I wake up in his basement, and I go look at the window, and I see... at the mirror, and I see a big chunk of hair out of my on my forehead gone, and I'm like, oh shit. So then he shaved my head for me, and he did it properly, but I thought that he did it wrong. So I'm like, Joe, my hairline's not right. So he fixes my hairline and he cuts it in more. I go home and my sister's like, you idiot, you cut your hairline off. And I'm like, oh shit, man. And Joe started laughing. Joe's like, I told you I did it right. And then, yeah, and during that night, my buddy, another friend of mine, I was sleeping on the chair because I have a tendency of drinking so much and I pass out anywhere. So my buddy grabs his hot sauce and puts it on my nose. And I wake up and I'm freaking out, and I bolted it after him, bolted it. And I was like about to strangle him, but he put freaking hot sauce up my nose. It was the worst feeling. Actually, a feeling that's worse than this is shower shit. Just to add to the story.
Well, what do you mean at the same time?
So what I mean is that what is worse than when someone takes a shower, you're clean, you're ready to go to work, say, and then you go downstairs, you're making your coffee. Literally 5-10 minutes later, after you've taken a shower, you got to go do number two.
Oh, that is
bad. Go to the shitter. How often does that happen to you? It happens to me like maybe once a week for work. I hate it. I'll be taking a shower. I'll go down and number two has to happen. The rule is shit shower. It's right. Not shower poop.
Yeah, the order is essential there.
It has to be. And like a lot of the time what I'll do for work is I'll stay in my bed for half an hour knowing that my stomach's fine. And then I'll go. And it's like, it's just... the worst feeling, because when you go, like for my job, I move a lot, and it's just, you don't feel clean when you're in a physical job, always moving, and it's, according to my friends, how we call it, it's called a stage five roast, we call it, the stage five roast.
What does that mean?
The stage five roast is like, you do a number two, and throughout the day, your sides, like your quads are always rubbing, and you get the burn.
Yes. We call that swamp ass.
You get the burns and everything. You just
down in Florida, we call that swamp ass.
My buddy Steve made that up, actually. He called it the stage five roast. And till this day, it's been one of the best things. I should get him on one day. You'll laugh, man. He'll tell you about the whole stage five roast. And like we've come up with so many words throughout our time that you would laugh so hard. But that's my story today, man. That is one of my – that's a story that always comes up with my buddies all the time, and it never goes unforgotten. Like, I think I've destroyed Rob's driveway throwing up on his driveway. I've ruined Joseph's basement. And the next time, I'll give you another story of what I ruined of his house, too. I'm a self-destruction person when I was younger.
You got some really patient friends. And I know a couple of these guys. And they're saints. Like to put up with... And you seem like you've calmed down a lot now as a grown-up. But, you know, like high school days, college days, like, they are saints for putting up with you, man.
Yeah. They got patience, so yeah, I tell you that much.
Well, that'll do it for us. Another award-winning story time with Jerry. Want to thank again Rob Gilman, the Torino blogger, for joining us, taking us inside a team we hadn't covered before. And, you know, to all of us, if you enjoy the show, to all of you who enjoy the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, you can do us a huge, huge favor by leaving a 5-star rating. It only takes a couple seconds, like 1 second, to hit the 5 stars, and it really helps us a lot. And, you know, if you have maybe 30 seconds, you can write us a review. A nice review would be great. It really goes a long way. And make sure you follow us on Twitter. The show has a Twitter account. It's at CalchoConPod, at CalchoConPod on Twitter. You can follow our personal accounts as well. Jerry is at JMancini8. I am at Alex Dono. And we'll talk to everyone next time. This has been episode 20 of the Calcio Connection. Ciao.